you're singing along with these lyrics that are like pretty heavy, and there's a lot of grief and pain in them. And it's like, I feel like it's we create a safe place to confront those things. If I'm singing some of those really heavy lyrics, then it's like I'm putting those words in those people's mouths. And like, maybe they're singing along with me and they're saying something that's hard for them to acknowledge for their own process. And now they're doing it at a concert with surrounded by their friends, smiling. And it's like, I feel like that's like the gift of our, what we do. It's just like this, you're going to leave there feeling better. I see people weeping in the front row a lot. And then 10 minutes later, they're screaming and throwing their, it's just like that roller coaster of emotions, man. It's like, there's nothing more real than that.
So here we are with Paul Hoffman of Green Sky Bluegrass. Paul, so glad to have you here, man. How you doing today?
Great, thanks for having me.
So for everyone out there listening, Green Sky Bluegrass recently came out with an incredible new album, Stress Dreams, and they're going to be going on tour early in 2023. Can't wait to see you guys here in Columbus on February 1st. Everyone out there listening, we got links in the description, so go grab those tour tickets and check out the album if you haven't yet. Anyways, Paul, I think it'd be cool to start this off talking about songwriting. And, you know, specifically when you're writing songs, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, that I've got an image of a trash can filled with crumpled up paper balls. I'm curious how you like evaluate whether things you're writing are good or not, and kind of like how you determine quality with your songwriting.
That's a very interesting question. Usually, and this wasn't always the case, but you know, since I've written more and it's become more of a practice or a tool, you know, as an early songwriter, it was like I would be going through some emotional thing and I need to like get it out, and it'd be like this cathartic process. And then I think that with all art, and I read this a lot in books about being creative, there comes a point where your creativity matures and you have to learn how to turn the process on, especially when you do it for work like I do. I just actually recently went away for 2 days to be alone to attempt to write songs. I'd never done that before. I was having a hard time making time in my life to do it. So I went and played for 2 full days. And it was really productive. But the one thing to answer your question specifically that I do now almost always is I don't finish the idea when I write. I usually will write, at the bare minimum, I will write like a verse idea or something, but usually I'll write like a verse chorus idea. And maybe if I'm really feeling the motif, I'll write another verse. But I kind of don't write the last verse. If usually I'm writing 3 or 4 verses for a song, I don't do that till later. And I come back, I sit with it, I reevaluate it with fresh ears later. And then often hear flaws or things that could be better. I'm like, oh, that should be changed, or that chord change isn't good. And then sometimes not even until we're recording do I write the final verse. One of my bandmates says about me that I write these sleeper third verses that are incredible. I usually think the first verse is the best because it's the one that moved me to write. But then sometimes I'm not, I work in kind of like a subconscious way. I have a lot of notes that I keep in my phone. So sometimes I'm working off a note idea or something, but sometimes I'm just playing chords and then singing words that sound good, or that I'm in the mood for or whatever. So when I go back to write that third verse, it's like a really editorial process for me where I'm like, what am I even talking about? Or I do this with choruses too. Like I'll stream out a couple verses sometimes and then I'll be like, what is this about? And then it's like I'm trying to write my thesis for the paper, you know, tie it all together somehow. So I guess to answer your question, my process for evaluating whether it's good or not is time. I get away from it. When I'm real in I was writing something the other day that like I record a lot while I write now too, and then listen back to it a lot so that I'm able to like evaluate it, not participating in it. This time too, I did something I haven't really done a lot of, is I recorded myself playing the songs on guitar and then played mandolin with them to try. And I was specifically, I'm writing from this like real pragmatic standpoint of like trying to create things that the band needs to use. And obviously I want them to be good and meaningful too, but I'm like, I want a fast song that's got like a real downbeat chop. So then I record on the guitar and then play it with the mandolin. And I'm like, does that feel right? And I'm like, that doesn't, I need to fix this. Or, so yeah, the cross evaluation, listening, you know.
I'd love to hear you talk about how you get yourself into a state where, you know, you're vulnerable enough to write about topics like that pertain to deep emotions, whether loneliness or fear or anxiety, what have you, like, you know, getting past this mask that, you know, we kind of all, we play this character, and then, you know, it can be a whole other thing to really feel our emotions deeply. And I'm curious how you get yourself into that state when you have to do that, like for work.
From a performance standpoint, it's like, you know, method acting or something. Like I really get into what the songs are about while delivering them every time, which can be like a kind of an emotional roller coaster for me. It's not easy for me to sing something that's like very emotionally intense and just be up there just singing it. So I'm like really thinking about the words and, you know, delivering them with intention. Often when I evaluate myself as a singer, you know, against other singers, that's what artists do. Be like, man, that guy's got a great voice or something. I'll listen to singers that I think have these incredible voices. And I'm like, I don't know if I have an incredible voice, and then people tell me obviously that I'm a great singer, but I think that my skill is the delivery. It's like the intention. Like that's what I think my strength of, I sing in tune most of the time too. That's useful, but
that's useful.
You know, it's like, I know these singers who have these like really unique, you hear a voice in like the second year, you're like, whoa, that's incredible. And then I hear my voice and I'm like, I just sound like a normal person singing. I get into it and while singing it and writing it too, it's like, I just, you know, this past week when I was in my little retreat, I had like a really funny list going. You know, I did a lot of what I did to set up and get started was like very like office work. I got a bunch of paper out and I like went through all my notes and all my various places, and then I put them in one long notepad so that if I'm like stuck writing a song, like I said, I'll just kind of start playing guitar and start singing. And then I sort of look at my notes and I'm like, is any of this relevant to what I'm singing about now? And then there'll be this one line, and then I'm like, oh, that one makes sense. And then I'm going to work that in. And then I start like fishing through my own ideas to make it a little easier. But man, it's like there, I talked to one of my bandmates while I was there and he's like, maybe as an exercise, just like write something silly or happy. And I was like, yeah, just not feeling it. I find that stuff really hard to write. It's like the hard things to say and the like complex emotional things they're easier for me to write about. It's like there's more to unpack in like fear and sadness, you know. It's like when we feel those things, there's like, it's hard to understand, you know, the anxiety of being responsible for my child or something. Like those are hard things to understand, and so therefore there are a lot of ideas to discuss and to sing about. Like I had a great day and my bagel sandwich was amazing this morning. Like that's not fun to write about. Like there's nothing to unpack there. Like, yeah, life is good, I had fun today or whatever. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem as complex. And therefore it all sort of feels cliche and done before.
As you've grown as a songwriter, I'm curious if there was ever a phase where you really kind of like ripped the Band-Aid off with going for like deep emotions, and maybe like a part of your development where you really did dig deep into those more complex feelings. Like, is that something you've kind of always been on top of, or was there a part where that really flourished in your songwriting?
I think, you know, if the first two records we made, as a teenager, I wrote songs too, and they were like, my mom teases me for them now. They were really dramatic, and like I kind of always was this way, for lack of a better analysis. But you know, I think the first two records I didn't have my voice as well yet, like Tuesday Letter and Less Than Suburb. I was pretty young, but when we recorded, Five Interstates, I kind of started to figure it out a little bit. I wrote a song on that record called Old Barns that's about a friend of mine's dad who got in a car accident. And I went to visit him. And it was the day he got his halo off. And he was kind of supposed to be like, never walk again kind of thing. It was amazing. But he said all these things to me that were like really resonated with me and really shocked me. And I went home and wrote this song, and it was like very journalistic. And then I sort of like picked up on this thing that, you know, I didn't need to come up with all the ideas for my songs. I just needed to be a good listener. And like all these things were happening around me. And, you know, there's a song I wrote, Demons, that's got a lot of like things I overheard and then turned into lyrics. So then I kind of started to tune into that a little bit. And then with the record Handguns, I think like where the band was at, where I was at personally, I started really cathartically writing through some like heavy emotions. It was like 2010-ish or something. So I was like roughly 30 years old. The band was serious enough that we were making money and we weren't going to quit anymore, but it was still hard. And my relationships at the time were difficult. And I think I got really personal with that record. It's one of my favorites. But after we recorded it, a buddy of mine called me and said, "Hey, I was checking out the new record. Are you okay?" So that's one of the greatest compliments I've ever gotten.
Yeah, I was about to say, I guess that's a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote a song about my mother-in-law dying on that record, and it's just some heavy shit. We'll all bury our mothers before we would like. That was like, it's still a lyric I'm proud of because it's just so simple. Like, there's no elevated language. It's not like some profound metaphor. It's just like a hard thing to say. And then every time I got to sing it on stage, I'm like, man, this is a hard line to deliver. And then like, that's kind of, and that's like in those moments, I'm like, that's what I'm looking for. Like, I love a good metaphor, you know, but anything that's just like so simple and true and profound like that, it's just like, that's what I'm searching for all the time.
Well, if you made it this far, thank you for listening. Just want to let y'all know, we've got these hand-dyed, ice-dyed Weird Music Podcast hoodies and also tees. If you'd like one, let us know. We'd love to get you one. Also want to give a big shout out to Voodoo Ranger from New Belgium Brewing for sponsoring this podcast. And a big thank you to the geniuses over at Thrax CBD for sponsoring us with their amazing products. Also want to give a big thank you to J&J Distribution, Ohio's premier Delta 8 and CBD wholesale supplier. Retailers, check out their brands Cloud 8, Compassionate Buds, and Zaza. Also big thank you to our local print shop, Franklinton Press. Definitely hit them up for any of your custom merch or custom printing needs. They'll take good care of you. Got links in the description. And yeah, much love, y'all. Now back to the episode.
I think it's profound that you welcome such a gut-wrenching thing into your mind, into your art, like burying a mother. Like, it's wild that you welcome that into your art. Is it therapeutic at all?
Very much. And I think for the crowd it is too. It's like, it's such a juxtaposition for the way our concerts are, because we're this like psychedelic rock band and our concerts are a party. So you're like, you know, with your friends and the lights are psychedelic and you're like releasing whatever your day and freeing your mind of your responsibilities or however you do that, alcohol, music, close your eyes, whatever. But then it's like, then you're singing along with these lyrics that are like pretty heavy and there's a lot of grief and pain in them. And it's like, I feel like we create a safe place to confront those things. And if you're like, you know, when people start singing along with my songs, if I'm singing some of those really heavy lyrics, then it's like I'm putting those words in those people's mouths. And like, maybe they're singing along with me and they're saying something that's hard for them to acknowledge for their own process. And now they're doing it at a concert with surrounded by their friends smiling. And it's like, I feel like that's like the gift of what we do. It's just like this. You're going to leave there feeling better, not just because you had a fun time, but because maybe you processed, you know, like a lost love that didn't work out, or the, you know, death of your dad or something that's been bothering you and you didn't know it. And then you sang, I see people weeping in the front row a lot. And then 10 minutes later, they're screaming and throwing their, it's just like that roller coaster of emotions, man. It's like, there's nothing more real than that, you know?
What a gratifying feeling to see that in front of you, like the byproduct of your music.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I go through it too, nightly. I mean, some songs affect me more than others sometimes, but like occasionally I'll be really into it and I'll be choked up, and it's hard not to be sometimes.
Do you feel like, you know, so I know you mentioned you've been kind of the way you are, a performer. You mentioned your songs were a little bit more dramatic, like growing up, you were dramatic a little. I'm curious, has performing and songwriting caused you feel like to, has it caused you to grow with your personality?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, I have a little bit more clarity expressing my ideas. It doesn't always come across in these interviews, but I've put a lot of thought into writing, and songwriting is really interesting because it's so concise. Someday I tell myself I'll swore away with another form, you know, like write a novel or something, but like you have to say a lot of really complex ideas in a really short amount of time in a song. And I think it's a useful life skill, you know, if I'm trying to have like a very difficult conversation with my wife or something, or even my bandmates, like the way that we communicate after 20 years, I've learned a lot about the language from songwriting.
As a musician, I'm curious what's most important to you with how you define success for yourself.
I think the most important thing I think is just being proud of the music we're creating. You know, I obviously want to survive and pay my mortgage and simple life stuff like that, but there's always a way. Yeah, just being proud of the music, making music that people like, that we are proud of and that we like, and you know, to continuously challenge ourselves. I feel really blessed that we are the type of band who plays our entire catalog, and a lot of bands don't do that. They go out and play the new album, and that's kind of the thing. And I think that keeps it really fresh for me. You know, some of those old songs that we don't like playing as much, when we do play them, can be really rewarding because you know, they're different and we get to do like a whole slew of things. So challenging myself and being proud of it, that's the goal.
I'd love to hear you talk about something with your creative process that you don't do, that you kind of stay away from, that you think helps you have success.
Wow. Man, I don't even know how to answer that question. Something that I don't do that helps me. I guess this is a good one. I try not to. You know, while writing, especially, which is the hardest part, I guess, of what we do, what I do. I try not to be overly critical while I'm in that creative process, or try not to like self-edit too much. You hear this from a lot of writers too, like just write it. And then, you know, I mentioned I come back. I think I'm really good. I excel there, I think, especially. Like I can take a piece of an idea if it's formulated enough, and I can be really critical editing it and do a good job. But I try not to do too much of that while I'm writing, because it's best to just get it out. Like this week I was writing stuff and I'd be like, this is too slow, this is all we need, and I'd be like, just write it. And then once you have the melody and the chords and the lyrical idea, then mess with it and be like, does it work faster, does it work with a different chord, does it work in a different key, like all those things. I find if I get too hung up on all that stuff while writing, I just won't write. I'll become confused and lose confidence. So that's my biggest advice to myself that I don't always take.
I love that answer. So, you know, in bluegrass music and improvisational music like jazz, jam bands, there's so much emphasis on technical ability. And I'd love to hear you talk about kind of the other side of the coin and, you know, musicians that can play every lick, that are just so talented. But, you know, can you talk a little bit about soul, about songwriting and performing, and something that maybe you think people who have such honed technical ability may be overlooking in some situations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about this all the time. I think all artists do. I often have told myself, you know, at the risk of being self-deprecating, I don't think I'm the best mandolin player. There are many that are better. I'm good at certain things about it, and a good performer, I think. But, you know, when I watch these players, mandolin, guitar, whatever, who are just like so stinking good that they can like play, it's like as if they can play anything they think of. Like they're never up against the personal struggle of their ability, never. And then I tell myself, this is maybe just like self-rationalizing since I'm not that guy. I tell myself that that must be hard because then they have to have new ideas. You know, for me, it's like, I have a lot of ideas. And while we're performing and improvising, I'll have an idea of something I'm trying to accomplish. And a great amount of the time, I don't pull it off. I don't succeed. My hand doesn't do it right. The idea isn't like baked up quite right. And so I'm like constantly like reaching for something that like, maybe I'm struggling to achieve, but my idea is greater than my ability. And I kind of think I'd rather be in that position because I think that the other position, you know, I could always practice more and get better. There's a solution for my problem. The other problem, being so talented, you can play anything, but then not being able to think of anything to play. I just don't know what the solution for that is. It's like, it's a more of a soul thing that I think sounds harder to fix. And I see players like that too sometimes who are like, they're not as interesting to watch or as performers. I meet fans and stuff who say like, oh, you're my favorite mandolin player. You're so much better than so-and-so. And I'm like, well, no, I'm not. You're wrong. That's your opinion. But, and then I think to myself, like, what is that? You know, like, and I think that a big part of it is that struggle that I think people witness. I'm up there trying my damnedest to like do cool shit and I don't nail it all. And I think that like, when I watch musicians too, it's like, you want to watch the person beyond the line, you know, so I'll say often one of my little catchphrases is like, if you want to push the line to the edge, you have to be willing to cross it and go too far. And you see these players that are so great that like, you never see them fail or flub. And then you're questioning to yourself, are they even really trying that hard? And I know they are, you know, it's like,
yeah.
You know, Sierra Hall, for example, is just this badass mandolin player. I get it in her. Like I see her trying and she played creative, really cool licks, but sometimes it looks so effortless. And I'll forget how awesome it actually even is because it just looks so easy for her. I think people just, they want to see that. And then with art too, there's like music, there's like this restraint thing. I think it comes later. And you don't see it as much in bluegrass because it's like you said, it's a proficient, like virtuoso thing, like hot licks, lots of notes, really fast. Whoever can play the fastest is the best, all that shit. And sometimes like when we're improvising, I'll be personally reminding myself to play something really simple, just like set up a groove, play something simple that's like hooky. It's not all about fast hot licks all the time. And it's like, I'm coaching myself to like do less, be content, you know, and it's, there's a restraint thing there. Those are two polar opposite sort of theories about like the struggle and the edge and the restraint and being content there. It's all really complicated. And even the really great musicians go through the same shit as the bad ones, I think here. But
wow,
they're really interesting. The whole process of like, you know, being the best doesn't mean you're the most liked or vice versa.
For sure. I love that answer. I feel like, you know, you bring up coaching with sports, with music, you know, with really anything. We build this muscle memory of going through the motions and kind of having these repetitive patterns we fall back on. And I'm curious with you, like improvising, songwriting, how do you keep what you're making fresh and not the same old thing, but like keep on getting out of your repetitive patterns? Like how do you do that?
It can be quite challenging. I definitely have like pet licks that I play. And you know, if I'm not thinking enough, I'll play them too often. Or if I'm not thinking just the right amount, I'll play them and not care. It's really a daily struggle. It's different every time. And it's the same with songs. Like what I just went through writing, I was really trying to like come up with new creative ideas, new chord progressions, new borrowed chords, and different melodic movement, different rhythms that I haven't used. And that gets harder and harder. We've written 8-10 albums or something like that. I think I've written 70 plus songs for the band. Like, there's only so many damn chords, you know? And then that, again, it's this interesting, like, attachment thing. Like, sometimes if I'm really emotionally going through something, I'll write a really simple 2-chord song and I won't give a shit if it's creative or not, because the what it's about is so important to me. Or like, does this melody sound like a Gillian Welch song? I don't care. Like, I need to sing this. This is about something different than a new creative thing. And then other times I'll be like, no, I always use that chord, or no, that's the same chord movement I use in this song and this song. And I think it's just like, sometimes you have to be really critical of those things of yourselves, and other times not. There are so many songs that are the same song. So I'm just having to be really familiar with mine. So when I'm repeating myself, I sing about repeating my ideas all the time. I have like 3 or 4 different lyrics that basically jab at myself for writing the same song again. That's one way I found to deal with it.
We touched on this a little bit earlier, but like, jumping to the side, I'm curious what about music you think can cause for healing to happen with people?
I think that it's just, there's like the emotions that are in music and the release, you know. It's like, there's kind of like there's a measurement of time with tempo and rhythm, but then there's also a loss of time in, especially like instrumental music that's long and develops. So there's that contradiction there. You just lose yourself. And I know that, you know, musician aside, I think about like all the times when I'm feeling really emotional about something, and, you know, and a lot of people do this, like, you're feeling down on yourself or something. What do? Listen to sad music to like intensify the emotion and just like sort of be like, I don't know, in it, all in it. Have you ever heard the Johnny Cash cover of Nine Inch Nails, Hurt? Oh no. Man, it's like, it's one of the most depressing, sad things you've ever heard. I remember one time listening to it for 45 minutes on repeat. I guess just music kind of like, if you're really listening, you kind of become alone in your thoughts with a soundtrack, you know? I guess you're listening to the words, so you're influenced by that. But if you listen to that sad Johnny Cash song 45 minutes in a row, you don't need to listen to the words anymore after 15. It's just kind of this vibe.
Some improvisational shows can make you feel like an hour passes by in like the blink of an eye. And, you know, with you having so many years under your belt as a musician, I'm wondering what you've learned, like what implications this like musical experience has kind of shown you about the way our minds work, about like time passing, and just kind of that profound experience we can have at a show, like what that's shown you about what it means to be a human.
You know, I was mentioning the like restraint to play something simple, and something I've learned from what we do, maybe even from like attending concerts also, but specifically what we do is that, you know, I find that when I really feel like the crowd is engaged and into it, and like, you know, we've got them in the palm of our hands, so to speak, we can do the simplest thing over and over again. Like, we settle into this groove thing, you know, maybe I got this delay thing on and I'm just kind of going beep doop 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 doop, just like, and then just hold it. Like, if the crowd is bumping and they're into it, like they need to like what we were just talking about, that need to be creative and like to be like coming up with some new musical idea sort of fades away. And there's like this contentment thing that happens. And then on the opposite, like if I'm not feeling as connected to the crowd or that they're into it, then I'm up there like, you know, this is, and it's trying to maybe be real creative. Like, I'm coming up with the way that I'm going to like incorporate a flat 6 into my solo, and I'm going to use it with this, and then I'm going to play this hot lick. And then it's like, there's this like detachment that happens there. That's like, I mean, I do that when the crowd's into it too, but I think there's like a, there's a lesson about ego there maybe or something, or that's like, you know, they'll less is more kind of thing. But it's just like the connection that like we feel, and my bandmates all kind of share this feeling, like when it feels right, it doesn't need to be anything specific, or like what it is enough. And there's, I don't know what that simple lesson is, but I think that, you know, maybe it applies to life in a grander way. Like when we're content, you don't need to try so hard. That seems like a obvious statement, but yeah,
I like that.
And in those moments too, the time, you know, it just goes away. Suddenly we've just been playing the same lick for minutes and minutes. The opposite will also happen, just like life's full of contradictions. Sometimes when we're having a tough show and we're having a tough time like finding the groove, the jams are longer because we're like trying harder. And when we're really nailing it, sometimes we're more concise because we're like listening well, and we don't have to like, it goes both ways. Or sometimes when we're really nailing it, they're really long because we just sit and groove. Those are my favorite moments, when we find that place where you can just be, I mean, literally like vamping a chord or something. Like no one's even soloing sometimes. And people are into it.
I'd love to hear you talk about how Green Skies have been able to, you know, for now, you know, over 20 years, like continue to get new fans and to stay relevant, where, you know, the hot new thing is the hot new thing. And, you know, in this kind of world where relevancy is here today and gone tomorrow, like I'd love to hear you talk about how Green Sky has continued to grow.
You know, I think a lot of that is just like all this stuff we're talking about, just like being real with our music. Often when we make a new record, I worry that it's like not new enough, because it feels just like more of us, you know, like we make more music, but it's not like, whoa, that new track is like so different. Like we have internal conversations about this a lot lately, especially with the last record. You know, there would be like moments where we'd be like, do we have to do something different with this song? This sounds like us. It just sounds like us. Do we need to like do something different to make it like more unique? And then we'd be like, well, maybe we should just be ourselves. Like, let's not overthink it. You know, and another, there's other songs on there, like the title track Stress Dreams, I think is unlike anything we've ever done. So we do like push through new boundaries and try new things. We take chances and take risks every time, but then to some degree, it always kind of just feels like the next step to me. And when I'm doing media like this for the record or something, I always feel like I'm undercutting us. But I wonder if that, like, if that works for our fans, because we're like, it's more music for them to love, and it's more of the same intention. You know, we didn't go change on them or something, you know, like all of a sudden we added a drummer and there's no more banjo, and they're like, this isn't the band I love anymore. You know, like the Ava Brothers, for example, they really changed when they did that first record with Rick Rubin. And I think a lot of people who love the band were like, this isn't the band I love anymore. It's like this bubblegum pop thing. But at the same time, they gained tens of thousands of more fans because it was more accessible to different people, and they were on late night TV. And I don't feel like we've had that moment ever in 20 years. We're just kind of still the same guys. I think we're better at what we do. But, you know, then I also question, some of those older records have like a rawness that we can't capture anymore because we didn't know what we were doing. we were just slamming whatever decisions we were making. We were committing to them and just doing it with full intention. But now we know what we're doing, and, you know, maybe it doesn't sound as raw or something. But
there's definitely a beauty in not trying to be something that you're not, for sure. And fans can hear it the second that comes up.
And in any kind of creative art, that's such a struggle for all artists. I read about it from painters, writers, even like actors and stuff like that. Like constantly, like, you know, the next thing you do has to be better or something. Can't just be more? Like, I mean, we play all our songs. So at some point we make a new record, it's like set list writing is really fun for a while, because you got these 12 new songs to put in there, and we never play them all in one night. So it's like, you know, and we have so much material now. It's like we're not like recycling ideas, but we have songs that like fill the same hole in the set list. So this song and this song are never going to be in the same set. And it's nice to have a refreshed, you know, you mentioned like how to keep it, how the improv is improvising, how we keep it fresh and stuff like that. That's kind of one of the ways, like new songs that have a similar approach. Like this song has this jam that has this chord movement that's similar to this old song, but in this new one, we're going to use the chord, this idea, and that this person's going to solo instead of this person. So we kind of get a second try or a renewed approach to an old idea without having to totally change the old song, because some of those old songs just go that way now. We do definitely change them, but you know, we'll talk about like old jams sometimes, and we'll like try to add some things to them and change them, and it'll be like, oh, it just doesn't sound like the way we've been playing it. It just doesn't sound like the song anymore. I guess we have to write a new one with this new idea. So
I love it. Well, Paul, starting to wrap up here, man. Thank you so much for joining me. This has been awesome.
My pleasure, man. Thank you so much for the chat, Cam.
Absolutely. If you listen this far, we've got links in the description to get your Green Sky Bluegrass tour tickets. And I'm sure by now you've checked out Stress Dreams, but, you know, re-listen to it. We got it in the description here. And yeah, just a couple more questions for you, Paul, as we're starting to wrap up. If you had to recommend three songs of your own as a way to get to know you, which three would you pick?
I would pick one of the new ones from the new record, Give a Shit. That's my really silly side. It's kind of a lyrical masterpiece in my mind, but it's not as emotional and intense as some of the stuff we've been talking about. I would recommend Living Over. That's a song I love playing. And Windshield, I guess, you know, the classic most played on Spotify.
As a thought experiment, what do you think you 10 years from now would say to yourself today?
Write more songs. More retreats. The retreat worked. I need to do that more often. So.
And final question for you. Let's say you could write one piece of advice that would be carried in your child's pocket for the rest of their days. What might it say?
Spend your time doing things that make you happy. This for the most part, this makes me really happy, and I'm glad I've chosen this path. It wasn't always easy. I didn't know if I would succeed, and there are days when I don't really love it as much, and then I'm like confused because this is what I love. But this is what I love to do, and I get to do it because I tried real hard and believed. That's advice I'd give others too. So I guess I'm saying I'm happy, and I think I made some good choices. I'm not giving advice that I wouldn't have taken myself.
Shout out to you, dude, for pouring your whole freaking life into something so cool. Like, people dream of giving a shot like you've taken their all, and to see you, you know, out the backside of the grind of being a touring musician, you know, finding success, all of this, like, so inspiring, man. Thank you so much for joining me here. Really appreciate you, Paul.
My pleasure. Thanks for tuning in.